Hello. Hi. Friday night, June 30th, 2023. Here we are. And you're gonna have to figure out who I am because I can't remember. There's a song, I'm pretty sure, but anyway. We're going to meditate for 20 minutes. We better get going because we're running late here. All right. We have to meditate fast. And how would you meditate fast? I guess just breathe really fast. That would probably be the best way. All right, folks. Party's over. Settle back. We're going to be serious now. Just settling into a comfortable posture. Just letting the body kind of find a alignment and stability. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And turning the attention inward. So just starting by feeling your body at rest. Tuning in to the energy that's flowing through the body. And much of our meditation, at least initially, the beginning of a period of meditation is just settling all that energy. And then as we tune in to the physical energy, we find also the emotional energy that also needs to be calmed, settled. As one sutta says, tranquilized. And feeling the breath moving in the body. Feeling the sensations of breath, touch of air at the nostrils or the movement of the belly. It can be helpful, at least again, in the beginning of a sitting to make mental note with the breath of in, out, or rising, falling, depending on where you're paying attention to the breath. And the words can help you to kind of connect and stay with the sensations. Sustain that awareness a bit more. as well as settling the body's energy. Of course, we work with the energy of the mind, thoughts, images that come through the mind tend to capture our attention. Oh, when you notice your mind has wandered, just acknowledge that, gently come back. It can be worthwhile to just notice what the nature of the thoughts that are appearing right now, what their nature is. So we start to detect certain themes and habits of thinking. Not to analyze that or judge it, or figure it out, just to see it. This helps us to disidentify with the thoughts, just to see them as passing phenomena arising in the mind, uninvited. They come and they go. With our meditation practice, we're trying to change how we relate to those thoughts, not be so much caught up in them, not acting on every thought, not believing every thought. Not even thinking of them as our own thoughts. This is a really remarkable insight to see that these thoughts don't really belong to you. Lots of times we have thoughts that we don't want to have. So if we own them, why are they misbehaving? And not to get too caught up in this sort of self-examination or mental examination, just more like a glance, and then coming back to the present moment, to the present experience of the breath and the body, whatever feelings are appearing. It takes a certain amount of trust in this process to stick with it in the opening minutes of meditation, particularly if the mind is very busy or the body is restless. that persistence, if we just keep at it, eventually pays off. Not that we are intentionally suppressing the mind or trying to make the body relax. Instead, just the repeated returning to the breath accomplishes these things over time. So this is why we need to trust that process, to just stick with it even when it is challenging. All right. Well, nice to see everyone. Yeah, I mentioned, I don't know if I said it clearly, that I did update the recordings that Angela and Monica make. And so so if you're looking for a class that you didn't hear or that you want to hear again, a lot of the ones in the past month are back up, are up there now. We might have missed one. So thank you, Angela, for keeping that going. You know, I didn't have a particular theme, so I just kind of pulled out some of my books. I realized and sort of forgotten that in my Daily Reflections book, available on Amazon, Buddhism and the 12 Steps Daily Reflections, I had forgotten that the last day of each month, I have the teaching is spiritual awakening, and it's and this book follows the 12 steps. Conveniently, there are 12 months, so 12 steps, 12 months, and so at the end of each month, I write about a spiritual awakening, because I don't believe that spiritual awakening only happens with step 12, as it says in the 12 steps. That's the only place where it's mentioned, but I think that each step has a kind of spiritual awakening. So I thought I would read from this and then see what happens. So June 30th, spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening of step 6 is the acknowledgement of our readiness or lack thereof to change or do the work of transformation and spiritual growth. It's easy to fool ourselves on this account. We think we want something different in our lives, but when faced with the actual tasks involved in changing, we might balk. Once we overcome this resistance, a world of possibilities opens up for us. Limiting ideas of who we are and what we are capable of fall away. Opportunities that seemed distant or unattainable now appear within our reach. I can't help but notice how, like, I wrote in the voice of Bill Wilson in this. It sounds just like the Big Book. It's very weird. I don't know if I knew that I was doing that. Anyway, let me continue. We see that our understanding about what was standing in our way was mistaken. It was our own resistance, fear, and lack of willingness that held us back. With this new understanding, we become excited about the future instead of fearful or despairing. We realize that while there is no easy or simple way to solve problems or to grow and heal, all we really need is the willingness to take the next step. We may not know exactly where we will end up, but we know it will take us in a positive direction. A sense of freedom comes with this willingness. We'd been trapped unknowingly in our own narrow view. With this step, we escape that trap into the open world of possibilities. Today, examine your own readiness to change and let go of counterproductive qualities and behaviors. Are you still holding back? Or are you willing now to fully participate in your own transformation? It's hard for me to, like, pay attention to what it's just because of the whole rhythm of it. And you know, I think that's largely because the nature of this section is one of sort of sounding like the promises, right? It's like, you'll not regret the past. Opportunities that seem distant or unattainable now appear within our reach. All right, sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. This is serious business. But it is such an interesting point. So I didn't even mention what step 6 is, in case you don't remember. Step 6 is we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And the defects of character that are being referred to are the ones that had appeared in the previous two steps in the inventory of step four and the sharing the inventory in step five. So this is, you know, about willingness and being ready to change. And as I say, it is so interesting how we can say that we want to change, but then when presented with the requirements, we balk. You know, it's hard. I mean, to do the things that will, you know, create a new life for ourselves. And it's not until we come to this step or this stage in our life, this kind of point of facing the challenge of change, that we really get to see how stuck we are, you know, and how deeply conditioned we are, that you know, this is something I've certainly had to come to grips with. And, you know, and part of that is actually acceptance. Like, you know, we can work and work and work, working the steps and therapy and meditating, whatever else. But at a certain point, we sort of, I come to see sort of that there are limits, that we have limitations in terms of how we actually are capable of changing. So it's not always about willingness, you know. You know, I think there are limits, and certainly, you know, for somebody who's getting sober and starting to work the steps, they probably have no idea what their actual limitations are. So it seems pretty wise to keep, you know, stay open and keep taking on the challenges of getting unstuck and letting go and all that's involved. You know, and the same is true in meditation. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, oh, I can't sit still, you know, I can't meditate, or I think too much to meditate. Or maybe they start meditating, well, I could never go on a silent retreat. I could never be quiet for that many days. And those are the types of things that I find are very much self-imposed limitations. Now, as to whether, you know, you're going to be able to go on like a 3-month retreat or, you know, sit for hours and hours, or, maybe you'll find your limits there. I find that an hour and 15 minutes is like as long as I'm able to sit still. Pretty much when I've been on long retreats and I'm trying to push myself, somewhere around an hour and 15 minutes is like I just run out of whatever it is, you know, physical, psychic energy. But it's interesting to look at even something like that. You know, and I really recommend playing with how long you sit. Like, try when you feel like if you have a standard amount of time that you sit, add 5 minutes to it and see what happens. You know, add 10 minutes, or even just keep sitting without looking at a clock or thinking about time, and see what it is that stops you from continuing. What happens? Well, typically, we you know, categorize the things that stop us from sitting as one of the hindrances. And the most obvious one is restlessness, you know, that you want to move. But there can be just aversion to, like, whatever. It could be physical pain or boredom or, you know, frustration with the mind. But it's really interesting to play with that edge. And when you feel like you're done, to say, well, let me see if I can just go for one more minute and see. And because the thing to examine is, as I'm saying, it's like, what is it that's pushing on you? And to find that, to find that resistance. Because when you find it, you can very often breathe into it. And then it turns out sometimes that there's like another side to it, where you let go through that level of resistance. And then next thing you know, you're just kind of like in a nice groove. You're like, whoa, I can keep going, you know. So that, seeing that, and of course, I mean, this is about meditation, but it's applicable way beyond meditation. You know, just whenever we find ourselves in a state of resistance, to be able to breathe through that. I mean, I say breathe just because that's sort of, it's somewhat metaphorical, but also literal. So, you know, that you do kind of breathe to try to relax yourself, but it's also a kind of trying to sort of cultivate a quality of ease, of non-resistance, and to be able to let go in those moments can be really freeing and can, you know, solve certain problems in our life. Like when we're in a situation where there's a lot of tension or it's fraught, and to be able to just like, oh, I don't have to, you know, react to this hindrance that's arising. I don't have to react to this aversion. I actually know how to breathe through it. I've done it when I was meditating, right? So the practice then lays a groundwork for this kind of letting go. And, you know, the other side of this, I would say, is having compassion and kindness, forgiveness for yourself, for your limits. So that, you know, if you find, okay, this is kind of the limit for me, to not like jump in with the judgment, oh, well, other people can meditate more than me, or other people, you know, can deal with this. It's like, that's not really what this is about, or what's wrong with me, or why can't, you know, we just, so easy to fall into these habits of self-judgment. And just remember, like, no, like, it's good, I'm trying, you know, that's just the trying. Oh, the will, as it says, step says, you know, being willing to let go, being willing to try to let go. It's a lot. It's more than most people do. So, I don't know, maybe I'll just open it up. I was looking at, if nobody comes up with anything, I'll pull out some of the questions I have in my workbook. But if anybody wants to join in and say something or ask a question or make a reflection, I would be happy to hear from you.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
I'm Julia. I appreciate you talking about, you know, the act of meditation and adding 5 minutes on. And I've been having a hard time sitting still. And so I'm going to try that this week, like maybe add 5 minutes on each time. And I love my meditation. It, you know, helps me to calm down, but I've just been having a hard time sitting for very long.
So what do you find difficult?
Just I get distracted with my family and a friend of mine called and she need, you know, I've been playing phone tag and I need to put my phone away from the computer.
Yes, so just indeed.
Things like that. The dog interrupting and and then running up and down the hall. You know, I get distracted.
The dog ate my meditation.
So, and, you know, there's been times like they're working on the building across the street and they were hammering and they had saws and I was meditating. It's like, whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, I need to just shut it down and sit, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a half measure of it. There's nothing. I mean, just, you know, it definitely, I mean, it's better to, I don't know better, but I mean, like to commit to a certain period of time than to just sort of, well, I'm going to try and just go for a really long time. It's just like, you know, just if you could just do 10 minutes committed, you know, then it's fine. But yeah, like you said, I mean, the dog and the phone and the kids and the, you know, if you can close the door on the world and tell them, please leave me alone, unless somebody needs to go to the emergency room, you know.
Right.
But I know that's not easy when you're, you know, in the family life, you know.
Well, they're older, you know, it's not like they're little kids. So
Right.
So
that doesn't mean they're not just as annoying as little kids, you know. So, I mean, you know, God love them, as they say. But, you know, I'm thinking of there's a line that they have in the suttas about the lay life. The home life is dusty. I don't know why they call it dusty and something. It's like, you know, it's just like messy and complicated. You know, the Buddha definitely liked the idea of not having any, you know, responsibilities. He was a little bit of a, you know, rebel. Thanks, Julia. Nice to hear from you. Anyone else want to chime in? Don't wait for somebody else.
Hey, hi, Kevin. It's Eleanor.
Oh, Eleanor. Hi.
A practice that I've been doing for a while is I don't have trouble sitting still most of the time. I don't have much in the way of distractions. I have a benefit from a lot of quiet in my living space. But a practice I've been doing with respect to pushing the meditation a little more is I heard a teacher suggest that the first time that you get that impulse, it's time for me to quit. I got to get up. I have to pee, whatever. You know, you say, okay, that's one. And then you return to what your focus is, your breath or the sounds or the irritating dog running up and down the hall or whatever you're focused on. Mm-hmm. And then you do that three times so that it's not a question of needing a clock to say one more minute, two more minutes. It's how soon does that next impulse to get up and move or to whatever. And then on the third one, you can reevaluate and say, okay, I did three this time. Is it time now to get up? But it only works if you have an unlimited amount of time to sit and you don't have to catch the bus or whatever. So
yeah,
a suggestion that's been useful to me.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. That's good. I know a lot of people, I think, use like Insight Timer or some, you know, a bell, that something that rings for them, which I think it is really helpful to set a time and then wait for it. And I have to confess, well, I don't have to, but I will confess that that's not what I do. When I sit down, I decide how long I'm going to sit, but I have a clock in front of me. And so I look at the clock as I go along. And the thing is that I don't have to look at the clock because I know how much time has passed. You know, if you do it long enough, you get a pretty good sense of you know, how much time has passed. But that's my bad habit. And because then when you go and retreat and you don't have control over it, you're like, oh, man, how much time is left? You know, it's the old on the retreat, like sneaking a look at your watch, right? Oh, it's the bell. When are they going to ring the bell? And it's always like, oh, it's just 5 minutes. Why didn't I just wait? Like, you know, but that's, you know, karma. Oh, Julie, hi.
Oh. Hello, everybody.
You're outside.
I am outside, and I'll turn my video back off in a minute. I really needed to hear tonight, and it was so beautiful. Trust the process, and over time, because of course I want everything to happen on my timeline. So, you know, the craving arises, 10 minutes have passed, that's enough, why isn't it finished? But really trusting the process and over time has been really, really helpful. A lot of things are still not available to me, but I am trusting the process more. So that was just extremely helpful to hear tonight. So I'm glad I was here to hear it with all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, it is such a funny thing, isn't it? You know, I've been thinking about like how, like the calming, the concentrating aspect of meditation works. Actually, I've been thinking about that for 40 years. So, but the way I've been thinking about it lately is that you don't go straight at it. Like you don't go straight, like I'm going to calm my mind, you know, or I'm going to settle in. Instead, we just try to pay attention to the breath. We just keep coming back. We just try to be mindful. And then out of that arises the calm. The calm comes out of the process. It doesn't come by trying to stop thinking, you know, pounding your thoughts down. And so it's, I think of it as kind of coming at it from at an angle, you know, kind of an oblique angle that we come at our meditation rather than directly on. So just a thought. John, hi. There you go. You're unmuted.
Okay. Thanks. I find that I tend to prefer guided meditations. If nothing else, for, you know, to, you know, hear someone's voice every once in a while and remind me that I'm not sitting here to think about something. I'm here to meditate. Remind me. And I'm hesitant to transition into more just, you know, silent meditations on my own without needing any guidance. So I was wondering, with the guided meditations, I'm comfortable sitting for up to an hour or so. I just seem to have some hesitation with if I were to sit on my own. I feel like maybe I'm not learning as much, or, you know, there's I could be listening to some wise guru or something that could teach me something while I'm meditating. So if you have any advice as to,
Well, I mean, I have a bias towards silent practice because I feel that it develops independence. You know, you develop your own trust and sense of, of being independent, of not being dependent on something external in order to do the practice, in order to cultivate the qualities. I think it's worth working at that. you know, whether, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't, if it's really unpleasant or unproductive, you know, yeah, I can see why you wouldn't want to do it. I mean, it's certainly probably more likely, although this isn't always true, but that you're going to have to deal with more kind of distraction and wandering mind if there isn't somebody interrupting your thoughts, like with the guidance. But that then gives you more opportunity ultimately to develop your own practice and to sort of make it more your own and sort of see what is it that's, what's really difficult for me and what do I really need to work with? I mean, I feel like you're sort of like, you know, asking for it from me. You know, you're sort of like, should I sit silently? I mean, you know, you sort of must know that I'm going to say that, right?
Right. I think I've heard you say it before, actually. And I feel like I'm in the shallow end of the pool, and I just need somebody to like push me into the deeper water.
Yeah.
Another thought I had, and I appreciate your insight, was maybe dedicating more time to reading Dharma related literature to supplement my meditations, and that will kind of give me some more confidence to silent meditation.
I think it's really important to study and to read and to always have a Dharma book going of one sort or another. And I would also say to really read to the level that's helpful for you, because there's Dharma writings that are just not that accessible. And it's best, I mean, for a long time, for a good 15 years, I really only read things in the sort of Jack Kornfield, Joseph Goldstein mold, and things that were sort of very Western, often a lot of stories and narrative. And that was really, really helpful for me. And it was only after that time that I started to dip my toes into more dense, sutta study and all that. Yeah, I've been thinking about this. It came up under some circumstance, but just to because a lot of times what I'm reading isn't the thing that I would actually recommend for people who aren't as experienced, because it's not that helpful to get stuck in something really dry and sort of scholarly. You know, anyway, yeah, I definitely do some reading along with your practice.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, John.
Likewise.
Gail, hi.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, everyone. Guys, I'm not exactly sure how to put this. I think I went for about a year when I was sort of in a spiritual depression, flatness. And I stopped doing meditation daily, because it became difficult and I felt like it was counterproductive. I was fighting all the time, and I'd be less peaceful afterwards. And it really bothered me, because I did all that self-talk about, you know, you don't know what you're doing and you're not good enough. And, and I had this conversation with my spiritual teacher repeatedly. You know, and when I have sponsees or something who talk about the same thing over and over, you know, kind of annoying, and I could hear it in myself, the same thing over and over, entrapped. I don't know what happened this spring, but you know, one of the things I gave myself permission was to know that whatever I was going through, it was not permanent, and that it would change. And if I tried to force it to change, it probably wouldn't change any faster. than if I just sat back and waited for it, whatever it was, to kind of peacefully change. And it has. And I've reached the point that meditation is like possible again now. And not only that, but it's enjoyable. Whoa. I mean, it's really nice to be able to be on the other side. I've told people, you know, that this is a good place and this too is impermanent. So I'm going to enjoy it the best I can for as long as it lasts, knowing that this is what it is now. And I do believe in these positive feedbacks, that if I'm in a good place and I say I'm in a good place, and that strengthens my ability to stay in a good place. Yeah. So I can certainly get into that negative, you know, I'm not doing it right, which makes me feel like I'm not doing it right. And then, you know, that negative, that downward spiral. And I really appreciate how you you're really gentle with us, or at least that's what I hear. Really gentle with, you know, not like getting on my case, my own case, and getting too judgmental, you know, that I can't do this. My mind's too fast, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I appreciate that.
You've
given us.
Thanks, Gail. I really appreciate you sharing that struggle, you know, because I think it's a very common one. You know, the dark night, it might not even be a dark night of the soul. It's just like a time when you get stuck, when the practice isn't, you know, if only meditation were something that just got better and better and better over the years, you know, and it's not. There's definitely, you know, peaks and valleys. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, don't drink or use no matter what. And after that, everything else is gravy, kind of, you know. I mean, I'm very habitual with meditating, but there can be months when I go without really having any meaningful meditation period, like where I'm just sort of putting myself in the chair, which is actually part of my belief system, sort of. I'll just sit there, all I do while I'm sitting there is think about the last round of golf I had and go through every shot that I had, you know, which would be like, you know, 90 different shots, you know, but like not to, as you, I think you were getting to, not to like make that a problem. It's like, this is just where the mind is, you know, right now. It's just operating like this, and beating it up or trying to force it into something is not productive in the least.
But well, that was only half the time. The other half of the time I had myself convinced that I can't do it.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of like back and forth, you know.
I know. It's just, we just have to keep going. I mean, there's no doubt, like, you know, you're reminding me of my difficult mind states, of which I, you know, have a few. Thanks. Catherine, you had your hand up.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Hi, I'm getting ready to leave for Guatemala, so I'm getting in one more meeting.
Oh, all right.
I have the internet there, so I'll see you next Friday.
Okay. How's your daughter doing?
She's doing really well.
And the baby?
Well, yep, three now.
He's three.
He's going to ride horses this
really
coming week. Yeah. So
wow.
I'm not taking my horse with me.
It's hard to get that on the carry-on, you know.
That's right.
How many? You'd have to like get a whole row for you. Sorry.
It would be cool. I was just thinking about the steps, and I'm just wondering if there's any insight that you ever got to through the steps that you didn't get to through meditation. Anything that you learned about yourself? I mean, I've done the steps three times, and one time in another program. And I'm just wondering about your experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, my first time through the steps, it was all new to me. I I didn't really relate it to meditation much at all. And but the moment that was most striking for me was when my sponsor said I should get a commitment at a meeting, and I started to clean up after this meeting, this Thursday morning meeting in Santa Monica. I would sweep the floor and make, you know, clean the coffee cups. And it made me so happy. And I felt for the first time like I was really a part of the community. And I realized, wow, this whole thing about service is really incredible. It's like, I had no idea, you know, I've been so selfish my whole life that the idea of just doing something for free and just helping people out and not trying to get attention, you know, not get playing my guitar or something, you know, but just that could be gratifying was a huge, huge insight for me that I got from the steps.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
That's a nice question. What prompted that question?
Well, I've been thinking about doing the steps again, and I'm like, I love doing the steps. When I came to study with you, I don't know, 6 years ago or something, at the Spirit Walk.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll go back to your workbook and take a look at that. Because it you know, I don't mind taking a look at my character defects, but I need that balance, because I can beat up on myself. I need a soft landing.
Yeah.
You know.
So yeah.
I think the way you do the inventory is you know you have the strengths and the stretches, right?
I have the what and the what?
When you do the inventory, I think you have us look at the positives, what we've done, but kind of the positive characteristics or aspects.
That's true. And the other piece of it for me is taking the view of not self. Mm-hmm. So that it's like the character defects are not me, and they aren't mine. You know, they don't define me in any way. But, you know, it happens that, you know, I've been doing this 8-week Buddhism 12-step course. And this Wednesday, because we're not, usually it's on Tuesday, but because of 4th July. Anyway, on Wednesday, we are on step 4 and 5. So if you want to drop in, just let me know.
Oh, what time is that?
It's 4 o'clock Pacific time.
On Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah. What's Guatemala? Is that like central time?
They're an hour ahead.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. The mountain time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do that, but I was working. So thank you. I will try to draw
it. Yeah, if you can, that'd be great. Just let me know, because we'd have to send you the Zoom link.
Okay.
All right. All right, folksies, it's a Friday night, and it's time for you to do something, you know, more fun than this. We are going to watch, there's a show called Anthem. It's a movie about the national anthem, but about like kind of creating a new national anthem. And Ryan Coogler, the director of Black Panther, who's a friend of my wife's, in mine, but mostly my wife, he's produced it, and it's on Netflix. So I think it's on Netflix. Anyway, it's called Anthem. So that's what we're watching, in case you need a tip for tonight's entertainment. Okay. All right, you guys. I will be here Tuesday morning to celebrate Interdependence Day, which is what Buddhists call it. And then for those who are in the Buddhism 12-step class, it'll be Wednesday afternoon, as I said. So, all right. Be well. Take care. Have a good weekend.